Welcome to the Apartment Rockstar podcast with the apartment rockstar, Robert Martinez. Today, Robert will be joined by best-selling author and business consultant, Tony Watley, to talk about their multifamily investing.
Today, we got a great entrepreneur who's going to share some insights on the world of investment and multifamily property management. Robert Martinez, the CEO of Rockstar Capital, an investment and multifamily property management firm specializing in the acquisition and management of value-add properties here in Texas. Guys, he's got a currently, his portfolio is based at around $350 million, and he's working on these acquisitions now. So he's the CEO and founder, but he also directs the investment strategy, sources, and investment capital, and also secures the appropriate financing for all his customers and clients. So, Robert, man, I haven't had any real estate powerhouses on this show yet, so we're going to get some good perspective from you on this episode.
Well, I'm really excited to be on the show. Thanks for having me. It's fun.
So one thing I was attracted to you, we were submitted by a mutual friend, is that you are heavily into the personal development space as well. It's not just about business. And I started to find that most of the highly successful business owners out there have been involved at some level of this personal development space. But I want to know your backstory, man. We always got an interesting backstory because I could tell you didn't grow up rich and things like that. No. Tell people who Robert Martinez was and how you became who you are today.
Well, if you're from the Texas area, I'm from South Texas, down in McAllen, a little border town down there. I was like everybody else. You know, I was told to go to school and get good grades. You know, my dad worked for Whataburger for 40 years, which is a major fast food chain here in Texas. And I went away to school and got an engineering degree because, again, you're told to get a good job and get good grades. And, you know, I went to Moody Houston in 97, went to work in the oil and gas industry, became a sales guy, and then did all right there.
There's a lot of people out there maybe have grown up with that same background story. Well, hey, if you can make six figures, you're going to be successful. Like, what do you think about that nowadays?
You know, I've got a couple mentors on that, right, that have helped me recondition myself, right, because you're conditioned to believe six figures is good, right? One of the mentors would say to me, you know, what gets in the way of a great life, a good life?
A good life.
You know, and we're all taught that six figures is a good life, and it can be, you know, but it limits you. I mean, why do you have a cap? Why is it okay to have a ceiling? And it's because somebody else put that ceiling on you. Another mentor like Grant Cardone, you know, I've been in his office with my two children. You could find that on YouTube. It was July of 2018. You know, it talks about 10X. Everything, you know, you say, if you ask the son, if you ask somebody, you know, that we know how much is a lot of money, they might say $1 million. But you know, you're like, wow, it is a lot of money. And then, but you talk to the son of a billionaire, he's not going to say $1 million. He's going to say like $100 million. He's going to say $100 billion. He's going to say a big number, right? Because he's at a different level. And so you've got to recondition a lot of your mindset and a lot of your thought processes that somebody else, the rest of the world, put on you. Go to school, get good grades is one of those. You know, you've got to really just be who you are, realize it's you versus you, and go out to life and see what you can do.
Dude, that was a good subject you just touched on. The changing of your mindset as we gain experience. You know, we hear about you're going to be a millionaire before you actually have a million. You have to think like a millionaire before you become a millionaire. We hear this a lot. And I'll tell you that when I became a millionaire, I didn't know really like what that meant. Because back then, this was like, you know, about 10, 15 years ago. A lot of times people just didn't have the experience. Like nowadays we can fire up YouTube and internet and find these things and, you know, these podcasts. I didn't have all that stuff. So I didn't really know anybody that was a millionaire. So it's kind of funny because when it became that success, I kind of thought, did I get lucky? Did this like lightning struck and it's never going to happen again? So you had a lot of self-doubt, even with the financial success. Did you feel that yourself?
I think everybody goes through that, right? Because, you know, your biggest obstacle in life isn't what you think you can do. It's what other people think you can do, because they tell you that this is who you're going to be. They tell you that this is who you are. And that's like, who are you to be able to tell me that, right? Like, do I want your life or do I want somebody else's life? You know, I like to watch this TV show I like watching called Suits. It's on USA. It's run 8, 9 seasons. And the main character, Harvey Specter, is this high-powered lawyer. And he's like, you know what? Everybody's here, but I want to live here. But why do we live here? Because they tell you that, right? And I think we start to like appease our parents. We start to appease our friends. We just, you know, your net worth is your network, right? Those are your people. So you analyze who's in your top five and you're like, wow, you're a combination of those five. But you can't grow outside the top five. or at least not very far. You're either going to be number one or you're going to be somewhere in between. And if you're number one, you need something else, another group, because you got to keep expanding. You got to keep growing. You got to keep pushing yourself. And if you don't constantly change that out a little bit, then you're constantly preventing your own potential of coming out.
Dude, I love that you just mentioned that, because it's so important, the circle, the people that we run with. And the funniest thing is that literally 5 minutes before we fired up this podcast, I created a Facebook post and I wrote this really long blog style post that I usually do. And the title of that is "We Simply Outgrow People." So the fact that you just touched on that is amazing, because there's so many people out there that look at their homies and they're like, man, I've known them since high school. And you know what? Here's the thing, guys, if you're sitting around and all you can talk about is the past, then you're not growing towards the future. That's a big indicator, buddy.
Yeah, it's funny. I was listening to you some of the, I was on a podcast right before this and they listed like every single accomplishment. And I'm like, I don't even think about that stuff. Yeah, it's great. It's occurring, but it's occurring. And as I'm looking forward, I'm looking in a different direction. I'm not even like, focused on it, right? Because I've got bigger goals, and I think it's amazing, right? Because if you can't even truly identify what your goals are, you just know that you're meant for something different. For me, that's when I'm like, yeah, I'm going in the right direction. Because nothing along the way is like enough for me to sit down and stop. Now, the converse of that, and I learned this from Grant Cardone, is like, be so busy that no one single setback is enough to stop you. No single setback is enough to derail your momentum. Things are occurring, but it also goes the other way. I'm so busy, I can't even stop to enjoy and smell the roses, drink the coffee. I'm just moving forward. And I think when you get into that mindset, it's a positive mindset of just challenging yourself and keep pushing yourself, you just start to accomplish great things. You just start, because you stop focusing on it, just do.
Yeah, and there's a funny label that goes around in society of the whole workaholic and things like that you get labeled by these people who are generally just kind of lazy and complacent, honestly, because I've never met anyone that loves their job that says that to other people. Like I love what I do, and I can tell you love what you do. You have this high level of energy about it. And the thing is that people be like, oh, well, you're just a workaholic, blah, 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 blah. You know what? But those people report to somebody and they don't like their job, or maybe they're not happy where they're at, so they're trying to bring you down instead of supporting you. But really the fucked up thing, Robert, is that there's people like you and I who just love what we do. We like to work, like we like to build things.
Yeah, it's certainly that. I think you found a passion. I was the same way. I remember when I was working in oil and gas sales, and I was okay. I was good at it. I didn't like it. I was good enough to make six figures, but it didn't push me anymore. So I was happy making six figures. I didn't push myself to evolve more because I didn't want any more responsibility. I liked what I was doing. It was good enough and it paid the bills and what have you. But man, it was such a damning mindset, right? Like, well, how did I get like that? And I remember enough times of them playing with my commission plan, because I learned to kill what I'm going to eat at night. That's a good sales guy. Low base, high commission. And I credit a lot of that with my success today. But I remember looking at myself and thinking, is this how it's going to be? And then I looked at my dad. My dad worked for 40 years at Whataburger, smartest man I knew. I mean, I don't know if you know anything about like number sense and slide rule and, the calculator. My dad could do all of that. He was just like amazing. You can give him complex, mathematical equations or formulas or computations. He could just spit it out, right, because of his just high wiredness. But he never achieved anything further than what he did at 40 years of Whataburger. It was a waste of who he was, And I said, is that what's going to happen? Is this what 40 years looks like? And then luckily I was blessed to have my mom, who has never met anything that she couldn't do. Whether she could really do it or not, she believes she can, right? And I think I was kind of came into that, and I realized that I was wanting to do something a little bit different, wanting to do something a little bit better. And that's how I fell into real estate. I was looking into something to try something new.
So what led you into the real estate side?
I was like a lot of good commission guys. You drive around town, you're making your cold calls, you're making appointments, and you're in the car a lot. I discovered audiobooks. I discovered business radio shows. If you're in the Houston area, you've heard a lot of different shows. This one had been on the radio for 25 years. I listened to Susie Orman and Ray Lucia and Dave Ramsey and all these guys. And the real estate club guy really just hit home. And after a couple years of listening to that, I was like, I'm going to go try this out. I'm going to go find out, if this is real or not, because I didn't believe it. I didn't think it was real. And I walked into that club and I literally walked into a Rich Dad, Poor Dad book. It was, if you ever read that book, you understand what I'm talking about. The whole club, to me, looked like a giant Rich Dad, Poor Dad book with an incredible peer group in there of like-minded individuals who all wanted the same thing. So you trade out your friends and your naysayers who've never done anything and they don't want you to achieve, and you walk into this group where everybody's like very entrepreneurial and pushing themselves, and you recondition yourself to believe, wow, what can you do if you're around the right mindset, if you're around the right positivity? And that's how I discovered real estate. I wound up joining the educational club. I spent the money to join. I made sure that I wasn't one of the ones that was gonna fail. There's a lot of guys that I joined with that I never heard from again, I never saw again. I thought they had a better skill set than I did. They just didn't have the will to push forward. I took advantage of all the educational classes. I took advantage of all the what they call their road trips and got to meet other peers' teams and, you know, touch the brick of the apartment complexes. I gave networks. I learned. I made friends. And that's how I became further along down. That's how I changed my mindset.
Man, what I'd really like to recap on that is it shows that you've taken a very serious approach to investing in yourself and your knowledge and gaining the and really the proximity of the people who have the answers, man. That's the thing, is that there's so many people out there looking for the information nowadays, but they go for the wrong place or they go for the cheapest offer, man. They're not really investing in themselves. Like, it's like, dude, you're not going to get the same results by doing this. And I'll tell you, like, I like that you said you paid to go do these things, because there's a whole lot of free stuff out there. Let's be honest. But you and I both know it's not the same level of quality. And Here's the other thing that I've found, even as a business coach myself, is that when you start to raise your prices, the people show up on time, they take better notes, and they actually take the actions, man. When things are cheap, they just kind of just don't really take things as seriously. Dude, I've given out, and I know you have too, we've given out millions of dollars of free advice, haven't we? Mm-hmm. Just free, just friends, content. People we know, people have questions, like millions of dollars, like valuable information. How many of those people have actually taken that advice when you give it to them for free and actually did something?
1%.
There you go, dude. There you go. So you can listen to all the podcasts in the world. You can gain a lot of information from people who are out there crushing it. But a lot of times, unless you're going to take the actions, like, why do that? But I'll tell you, like, I still have mentors. My mentors are Ed Milet and Andy Frizzella. They'll be at the RT Syndicate event this weekend. And the thing is that, you know, that's almost a six-figure investment to be in that circle. So you don't think I'm going to be paying attention and taking notes and getting as much FaceTime as I can with my mentors?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very similar in the real estate space. You know, a lot of my peers, they chase after the Section 8 housing or the government housing. They're like, wait, what? Why? Why do you want to chase a market where the people that live there didn't pay to live there? How do you think they're going to treat it? They have no emotional attachment. You know, if you're getting a business card to somebody randomly that you didn't know, you know you're not going to be doing any business with, and you lose that card, or you walk out of, I don't know, somewhere and they give you a flyer as you're walking to your car, is you look at it, it's nothing, you throw it away. Right? I don't know how much they spent on it, but it's a waste, right? And you don't do anything because you didn't ask for it. Somebody gave it to you. It's the same way with the Section 8 housing, and I think it's a similar example to what the point you're trying to make, is that if there's no emotional attachment, why are they going to care? Certainly in the real estate space, they're not going to take care of their apartment. So I don't like Section 8 housing. We don't encourage Section 8 housing, because if you haven't had to work for that paycheck that produced that rent check, then you're not going to take care of me. And even if you're a good guy, chances are your friends, I don't know who they are, and they're going to come visit you, and they're going to tear up my property. And we don't encourage it.
Yeah, that's huge, because you definitely have the tenant quality. That's the nightmare that most of my friends have shared, that in a real estate, man. And I'll tell you, my wife being a realtor, trying to help these people just selling off their rental properties, like, the number one thing we hear is like, holy crap, man. Like, the tenants make or break this deal.
Yeah.
Like, it's not about the money. It's like, who's living there that makes the
screening
deal.
Is everything on single family rent houses. If you hear all those scary landlord stories from people who didn't do a good job at management. You know, you got to be very tough on anybody that moves into something that you own. No misdemeanors, no felonies. I want a full month's rent. I want to know where you're at before. And I want to make sure that I've interviewed you properly. And I can gauge you and see, are you going to take care of my investment? Because that's what it was. Somebody paid $100,000, $200,000 for an investment. They put $30,000, $40,000 in to make it better. They have down payment money into that. And you go and you crap all over their house, right? Because they didn't screen you right. They see the first month's money, they take it. They don't screen them. They just want somebody pays 6 months in advance. Like, why would you do that? Who does that? Nobody does that, right? Drug dealers do that. This do that, right? They want you to go away. They don't want you to pay attention. We have instances in the apartment where someone wants to pay a year in advance. Like, yeah, we're not taking them. Why? Why not? The money's here. Then we never have to chase them for rent. They go, who has in our demographic 1 year at $1,000? Someone's going to give me a $12,000 check to live in my community? You got to pay attention to what doesn't sound right. If it quacks like a duck, I'm sorry, if it walks like a duck and it sounds like a duck, it's probably a duck, right? Yeah. And so pay attention to the signs. But that's where the issues happen in landlord horror stories, that the people don't do their due diligence. They're in such a rush to move somebody in and start making a little bit of cash flow.
So did you do different aspects of real estate, or did you go straight into the rental property business?
Yeah, you know, that club that I joined, I thought I joined for the reason of doing single family rent houses. I thought that I was looking for a way to subsidize the income that my employer at the time was monkeying with my commission and taking away from me. So, you know, it would have been buy a house, make $400, buy a second house, maybe add another $300 to $400. I would be like, that's great. That's, you know, I'm still working, but it's subsidizing, right? I walked into the second day of the training and the education, and I got exposed to multifamily real estate, and I realized, whoa, what a different animal this is, right? Because in single family, the biggest difference is that you can't have scale, very much, very big scale with single family, and two, your value of your house is based on your comps. The value in your apartment complex is not based on your comps, it's based on the apartment complex, which is because there's an NOI. Income minus expenses is the NOI. So the bigger that NOI is, the more viable it is to the lender. The valuation goes up, right? I can't, you know, if you were to own a single family house and raise it $100 on your rent, that's great. You added $100 to your cash flow. It didn't increase the value of your property. But if you raise, I don't have my, somebody has my phone. If you have a $10 rent bump on 100 units, that's maybe you can do the calculation with me. A $10 rent bump on 100 units, that's $1,000 more a month. Right, that 1,000 times 12, right? Because you get it every month, is now $12,000. If you take a 6 cap, take the 12,000 divided by a 0.06, that's a monster number. Well, I mean, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars of valuation that you just added to your property that you can't do that in a single family house.
So if I'm understanding that correctly, it's because you can charge more rent and you've proven the rent is higher, the value of the property is higher. Is that correct?
So the property is based against the NOI, the net operating income. And then the lender applies what's called a capitalization rate, where someone's the reasonable return that someone's willing to pay if they paid all cash for the property, right? So in this example, again, if you do $10 times 100 units, it's $1,000 times 12, $12,000, just $10 rent bump, okay? Divided by 0.06, I created $200,000 of valuation for that property. What if I could reduce expenses by $10? What if I train my staff, hey, don't be going through all the, the hefty bags so quickly. Really, you know, fill them up to the top, not halfway. What if, you know, saving a couple boxes saves me $10 a month? I've added valuation to my property, right? So it all goes back to the NOI. If I can raise the income or if I can reduce the expenses, the easiest way for us is resident retention. Making sure that when people move in, they don't move out. They renew. Because all the money we make in real estate happens when people renew. And the reason is that it costs me money. It costs me $1,500 to $3,000 to move somebody in, right? If you ever own a rent house, you've got to get a rent ready. Well, the same thing in the apartment world. But if they don't move out, what happens? I don't have to get a rent ready.
Yeah.
And I probably get a rent bump. So not only have I reduced increased the NOI because they didn't move out, I've now increased it again because they're paying more rent.
I like this, man, because it's very similar to the business valuations, all based on your EBITDA, right? Your multiples,
yes.
3 to 5 times your EBITDA if you got a unique branding and propositions. I didn't even think about these multifamilies really being like their own business is what it sounds like.
I have 23 businesses, and it's my 23 communities, right? Because they're all independently valued. And they can all be sold independently. And they all have their own team. They have their own property insurance. They have their own property tax. It's 23 different businesses you own.
Awesome. Did you really just create like 23 different LLCs, or is it all like an umbrella?
Yeah. Okay. No. Every one of our investors, we only do LLCs. So if you put 10% of the money in, you have a 10% voting rights, 10% ownership in the property, right? And so it's we have 23 LLCs. There's no general partner. There's no LP, GP. It's everybody's. I'm the managing partner of the investment. I have a voting right associated with my earnings as well, with my investment contribution as well.
So when you first got started and you got your first multifamily unit, what was that?
So my very first one was in 2010. That was the first solo one I did. I got involved in the business in 07. I had a business partner at the time, primarily because I was scared. Primarily because he sounded really, he was British, had a great, you know, gecko type of voice. He could charm you and very debonair. He had a little bit of real estate experience flipping single family houses in London. And I had local market knowledge. What I realized today is I just was afraid. I was afraid. I wanted someone to hold my hand. And we, between 2007 and 2011, I ran 2,000 units and over 10 properties and during the recession. And again, my sales background came into effect. I knew how to sell. I knew how to get the most out of my staff to properly deliver the right unique value proposition with the prospect coming in. And they realized this was the best deal for them. So we were able to survive the recession, put people out of business. And, you know, because that's what happens, right? They, you put people out of business during the recession. It's either them or you. And we survived. In 2010, I was able to buy my first property. So before I ever took a dollar from anybody, I had operated successfully 2,000 apartment units on 10 properties. It was 118 units, built 1984. It was comprised of all two beds. And I paid $2.9 million, which is, I think, if I remember right, $24,500 a unit. Today, that property is probably worth in excess of $100,000 to $105,000 a unit. It's made it's made probably 350% cash flow. And if we were to sell today, it probably would generate another 350 to 400% out to the investors.
So how often do you see like a pattern keeping the property and just owning those until you sell those?
So our business model is to hold it for 7 to 10 years. So that means I want to fix everything day one that can possibly break in the first 3 to 5 years of operation, because I want to reduce the expenses. My thought is if I fix everything that, that could ever break, people will want to stay and renew. They'll see pride of ownership. My income will go up. My NOI goes up and I can refinance the property. When I refinance the property, I get a new valuation. I do a cash out refinance like you would do in your house, but I do it at the millions of dollars level, right? And you pull it all out, you distribute it back to the investors, and then I do it all over again. I keep some in reserve. I fix now what's going to break over the next 5 years, and I do like another mini rehab, and we do the process again.
Man, it seems pretty aligned there, because the 7 year mark seems like when all the appliances start to fail. You have to go back and refurb like hundreds of units. Yeah. So you kind of sell it off before you get to that point and have to replace everything.
Yes, yes, that's exactly it. You want to hold it. I've only sold one asset. It was a Class A asset that I bought in 2014. Market conditions is why I sold it, but I haven't sold anything else yet.
That's good stuff, man.
Long term holder.
I want to touch on the partnership thing. Not specifics to that gentleman, but I think a lot of people do get into partnerships because they want to jump off the cliff holding hands with somebody. You know, like you said, it's a security thing. What are the mistakes that most people think, you know, make? Or actually, let's reframe that. What are the qualities in a partner should somebody look for?
I don't believe in partnerships. I don't. I've learned my lessons with that. I think that it needs to be run by one person. One of my mentors used to say that the only thing with two heads is a serpent or some sort of, you know, mythical creature. And I think he's right. I think you need to have one person. It's got to be clear who's in charge. And you've got to be able to that person that goes out there and basically dictates the strategy and make sure that the execution of it occurs. I think people choose partners because they're afraid. They're afraid they can't do it. They give up a lot. You know, I look at, if I could have done that back in 07 instead of waiting until 2010, 2011, I left millions of dollars on the table that I made for my business partner. You know, and if I had just, I had just learned on my own like I have been before, then I would have been better off. I think that the reason why my company today, Rockstar Capital, has so much more successful today is because I learned all the lessons and I left all the bad habits in that old company, and I didn't bring any of that over to the new company. And so that allowed me to start fresh with a clear board. I brought in who I wanted to sit in what chair, and I worked around them, and it became my body, my spirit, my soul, my company culture, not a shared culture with somebody else who didn't have the same basic culture as me.
Yeah, that's huge. I think a lot of people have this perception of partnerships as like, we're going to build this pie and you're going to get half the pie and I'm going to get half the pie. And the problem is I always teach people, your partner needs to bring their own pie and it needs to be a different flavor. So if you're going to partner, it needs to be some strategy there. You definitely don't want to partner with somebody that's got the exact same skill set as you. Like, that's a total waste. You're basically going to take half your paycheck and give up half your voting rights. And you're literally married to whoever you partner with. Most people don't realize that.
So yeah, and when you get out of it, it's a divorce.
Starting companies. Yeah, they start the companies with their best friend because they think like, hey, we're friends and we both want to make it to the top. But you know what? A lot of times those business partnerships ruin the friendships because you guys are too similar because you're friends, and you're essentially, you start to dilute your effort, because if both of you are marketers and you're both trying to market over the top of each other, you're not going to double the effort. You're going to dilute each other's by half.
Absolutely. And then what happens in really in any partnership, it's going to end. Every relationship starts and ends. Everything. Yeah. This podcast has a start and has an end. Everything in life has a start and end. So that partnership is going to start and it's going to end. And what's it going to end on? It's very odd that it ends amicably. It's going to end because somebody's feelings got hurt. Somebody's emotions got involved. And really often it has to do with money. Somebody's stack got a little higher than the other person. You know, and it shouldn't have happened, but it did. Everybody had the best intentions until things go wrong. And then you said, I don't talk to that guy anymore. And we were, we got really tight during those 3 years, right? You know, I moved my family from Katy, which is a suburb of west side of Houston, into, you know, central part of town, into that neighborhood, because I wanted to have longer business meetings with him. And in the end, it was one of the, it was something that contributed to the demise of our friendship.
That's it. And so if you're listening to this, don't think that you need a partner. If you can hire people to do the things that you need as a partner, like hire them, get freelancers, get some temps. You can hire a team, man.
The key is, you know, find out your success. Find out your skill set and focus around that and hire your weaknesses. You know, if you go and like, I'm a great sales guy, then you be in charge of sales and marketing. I'm a great marketer. I'm great at team building. Then you do that. But I'm not so great at numbers. Don't bring in a partner just because he's good at numbers. Hire that out. Get a bookkeeper. Yeah. Get an accounting group and keep your equity and just have that outsourced out. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just was bringing on that problem.
I think it's a lot of times people just don't think about the future valuation of their company. They just think, like you said, like we're going to hold hands and it's a security blanket and like, hey, we're boys or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, the thing is the company gets out of hand and it grows millions of dollars. And now you're like having to split something with your basically an accountant that you could have hired for, you know, $50,000 a year. So there's a lot of things you got to think about in the future, guys, if you're going to start that company. And don't think you need somebody, because there are coaches, there are mentors, there are other people to help you with the information you need. And you're going to be able to build a team. But I want to touch on that because you enjoyed the scaling out your team. What's it like to hire that rock star team that you got?
I tell you what, the biggest obstacle that I face today is shedding the mom and pop and becoming more of a corporate kind of thing. You know, in London or in subways, right, you see mind the gap, right? Well, that means when somebody moves out, someone's got to be willing to move in, right? But in the beginning, you are the gap. You are the whole thing. You're manning it all. You're the guy that's portering outside. You're the guy that's leasing and doing the sales and the marketing and doing strategy. And that works for a long time. I mean, there's a reason why you're the one sitting in that chair. You're the one that was able to sign on a $2 million purchase, you know. So you have a certain skill set with you. But if you want growth, you got to learn to delegate. You know, the E-Myth. I can't think of the gentleman that wrote that book, but
Michael Gerber.
There you go. Fantastic book. I read it on a road trip. I bought it later on an audiobook so I could listen to it on the way back, you know. And I'm like, wow, you got to learn to delegate if you really want to grow in life. And otherwise, you're just going to be like that guy that owns the Subway shop. And he works it every day. Yeah. He had dreams of owning multiple Subways. And in the end, all he did was buy himself a job, right? Because he couldn't learn how to get out of that. And that happens. The same kind of guy that goes out and decides, I'm going to buy a single family house and I'm going to do all the improvements and renovation myself. I'm going to save money. Instead of hiring it out and bringing somebody in that allowed him to focus on deal number two or deal number three, right? So I think a lot of people get confused in that, but you don't have to do it all. Figure out what you're good at and hire what you're not good at and grow that way. And along the way, you got to think, hey, if you really have a growth plan of getting to 1,000 units, who's going to help you run it? Do you have a regional manager? You know, do you have a regional maintenance manager? How are you going to get there? Start to identify those along the path. Like, okay, that guy's got potential. That guy's got a potential. And bring them into your group. And what I mean by that is invite them over to dinner. Bring them into your life. Find out a little bit more about them. More importantly, you know, I try to give 51% of the relationship to my team. So tell me what's important to you. Help me understand what is it that you want in life. And maybe I can help you get it. Maybe it's your first car. Maybe it's qualifying for that first house. Maybe you do those things. When you help people in a way that no one else is willing to help them, they'll remember that. And they'll want to help you. You know. So how do you get your team to believe in your dream? How do you get your team to believe in something that is important to you? Care about them first. Care about them. Care about what's important to them.
That's so important. There's so many ineffective managers out there, especially in corporate America. I say the middle management suffers the most. It's just the people that... they only think about the job titles or the employee numbers. They don't really, you know, classify people and understand their individual motivators. So that's actually a big tip from a leader, is that you need to understand those individual motivators of everybody that's on your team, because that's the only way you're going to get the best out of them. Sometimes people think they can throw money at you and they're going to get a better result. That's not always the case. Some people just want more acknowledgement. Some people want more responsibility. Some people want less responsibility. Some people want to be in a different department or function. Some people want to get that manager title and they're you know, driven to become the leader. So you have to understand what the motivators are, and you won't get that unless you ask and start to have these open door conversations with the people. But there's a lot of people out there that just wear that manager or that owner or the CEO title, and they just think that they're the boss and nobody likes to work for them. They got a high turnover rate, and that's probably really similar to your multifamily turnover rate as well. Every time you lose an employee, you have to train somebody. That's a big cost, man.
Yeah, you got to communicate, right? The reason why you don't know the answers to those questions on what motivates them, because you didn't ask. If you just ask, what's important to you? How can I help you do it? Chances are you have the knowledge or the experience that they haven't acquired yet. And you're like, you know what? Don't go to that guy to buy your first house. I know how to do this. Don't go to that lender. Let me get you in touch with the bank. I know the bank president. Let me see what he can do. Oh, you got something with your credit. Hey, he said, come back in 3 months, pay that off right now. You know, get your score high enough and now you can qualify. The other guy they went to would never have told them that. They're just another number, right? Probably goes, you showed them, you helped them, you know, they care. Right. And so you got to find out what motivates everybody. Everybody has a emotional attachment to something, and there's something that inspires them. There's something that motivates them. There's something that scares them. And you got to find out what that is and see what you can do to take away that fear or help them find that motivation and encourage that inspiration for them. Absolutely right. So what was your last question you asked about?
I think you summed it up pretty well.
Yeah. I go on tangent sometimes. I apologize.
You nailed it. So another thing that's a big thing about these companies is the culture and the core values. Mm-hmm. Let's explain what Rockstar Capital, what is the culture there?
You know, recently I had Tarek Al Moussa, who's the star of Flip or Flop on HGTV. And he found me on social media, you know, and he heard about us and wanted to know who we were. He's got his experience in single family houses and he wanted to network and get more familiar with multifamily. And he came and he found us on Instagram. We text back and forth for like 5 months. And he said, you know, I want to come out and meet you. I want to come out and meet your team. And he was just here last week. I don't know if you follow me on any of my social media platforms, but you know, I put the whole vlog out there and the little micros and what have you. And he said that he had never been treated better on any trip he's ever been than this trip here. You know, we rolled out the red carpet and we gave him full access to the books, full access to our apartments, and created a friendship and a relationship with him. Then maybe there might be a future project, you know, down the line for us, right? But it's that's just having a sharing mindset. And that's what separates us. I cared enough that I was willing to do that for him. I know what he wanted. You know, I know what I wanted from the experience. I wanted the co-branding. I wanted to be able to share that and show that I'm an industry leader as well, right? That people are coming to show. So you communicate what each other wants and you help each other get it. He wanted a little bit more knowledge. I want a little bit more exposure. It's worked. I mean, my Instagram following is huge right now, you know, versus the previous year. I've more than doubled it in the last, you know, week, right? Just from having exposure like that, right? So you've got to figure out, you know, what everybody's angle is and try to see if you can address it.
Yeah, that's big, because what I'm hearing is a growth mindset there, because we've both realized that there's an abundance of success, that there's no limit of success available. And when you start to collaborate with those kind of people and help them and they're helping you, like, it's a win-win of everything. And there's a lot of people out there, especially real estate, automotive, all these different industries that are just very much guarded secrets. Like, they got the deep secrets. Like, you know, come on, man. Like, the stuff that you know, there's a lot of people that know that. And it's like, you could tell everybody what you know, but it doesn't mean they're going to go do that or be your highest competitor. So it actually makes you actually appear more trustworthy and nice to actually share those things, because there's nothing really proprietary or super strategic. You know what I mean? Because, like, you can give them the advice. They're not going to compete with you anyways. A lot of times it just kind of goes in one ear out the other. But if you start to be that transparent guy, helping everybody, just giving them some general business knowledge and, you know, really just supporting them any way you can, then all of a sudden they're going to get more business as a result. People haven't figured this out yet.
I think you're right. There's a lot of scarcity, abundance mentality, misconception. I had it too. I've been through my own little lessons of learning that, you know, where I would share something with somebody. Next thing I know, they would start doing it themselves. And you'd ask, oh, hey, so that tip I gave you is helping, huh? They're like, what tip? Oh, so you don't remember that I gave you that tip. You don't remember that I talked to you about culture and team building. You don't remember that I told, oh, okay. So then, yeah, that creates a scarcity mentality. You're like, oh, I'm not going to share anything anymore. But then I started thinking about, why am I like that? Why am I acting like that? It's because I think he's my peer. I think he's my equal, and he's not. He came to me, right? I'm operating on a different level. So you know what? You can imitate, but you can never duplicate. That's a cheap Chinese import. I'm the original thing. I'm American made, right? You're just trying to copy my design. That's okay, because you don't get the spirit of what caused me to think that. So you're going to need ideas. And again, you can't refill that pipeline again, right? So then now I actually went just the other way around. You mentioned earlier about, you know, giving away your best content for free. You know, you're right. You know, you might have one guy that does something for it, but if I let myself think that we're on the same growth plan or same level, that's when it bothers me. You know, he's living here. I want to live here. Remember, we talked about that, right? And so it's like, so now I have a whole website called theapartmentrockstar.com that has all my content on there. Free. I don't have a single product for sale today. There's nothing that I produce. It's all documentation of my own legacy, documentation of things that I'm building. And you can copy it, you can use it, or you cannot. You know, I try to give credit to Grant or to Gary or anybody that I pick up something from, and I try to reference it, you know, to you on this podcast, right? Because 99% of the people won't do anything about it. But what do I care? I have a different plan. I have a different growth platform. I have a different destiny that I'm trying to hit, a different mindset that I'm trying to live at. You know, what do I care what's going on behind me? You keep looking back, man, that's going to hurt your neck. You got to keep looking forward, right?
Yep. Yep. A lot of people are just focused on the past. We can only really change the present moment. I mean, this moment you and I are talking is the present moment. We can only change things now. We can future forecast. We know where we want to go. We can see the version of ourselves that we want to become, and we start to operate and think like that future version of ourselves. But too many people really hang on to the past, man. They let that story and that sob story really, like, really dictate the things that they're not doing today. And it kind of blows my mind.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
So let's talk about the importance of social media and putting your story out there. Because I know that you're doing these videos, and I watched a couple of your vlog videos and your social medias. You're very active, but were you always like that?
You know, it's really funny. I'm glad you said that. I was very active, especially in the early years. And I wish I had a camera following me, show me around. But what happens is you get a little complacent. You know, I went through a life change in my life a few years ago, and it really made me question a lot of things in life. And I started not working as hard as I used to and started living off of yesterday's successes. And then, you know, I got re-inspired again. And I think one of the things that helped re-inspire me is that I had a new group of people around me, a production team. And man, they don't have any time for you to sleep in bed. You know, sleep in. They don't have time. They have a schedule. They have things to do, right? You know, like, you know, these podcasts today, I totally forgot, right, that I had this on the schedule. Somebody reminded me a week ago, but I got so much going on. I'm like, you know what? It's not. That's their focus, you know? And they're, you know, every time that I do something, I'm moving the needle. And if you think about that, you'll have a different mindset. I'm so blessed and happy to have my production team and happy the people around me, because it does motivate me again. And now I'm starting to feel like myself again after my life change and kind of going through it. And so it's like I'm having a hell of a time, man. It is fun. And when I'm able to, like, eliminate the noise, you know, then I come up with new strategies to help my company rise above the noise. You know, I love promoting our business, you know, and it's a lesson I got from Grant Cardone. Directly, he told me that sitting there at the table, you promote or you demote. You're promoting it or you're demoting it. How am I going to know how good you are if you're not telling me, right? You know, you got to tell me who your accomplishments are. I mean, you read some of them at the beginning of the podcast. How are people going to know who I am if you don't tell them who I am, right? You know, and so it's like you have to do that. We're so conditioned by mom and dad, you know, color between the lines, keep quiet, don't say this. When kids just talk, right? And we're like, no. You should change that. I wish I could go back to my kids, you know, when they were younger, and I would encourage, no, talk loud. Tell them how great you are, right? And one of them gets it. I mean, one of them, it's a quick little story. I went to a parent-teacher thing, and it was a bunch of other parents outside. We're waiting our turn to go talk to the teacher right in the hallway. So, you're Ryan's dad, huh? I'm like, yeah. Well, my son says your son is the fastest in school. Oh, really? My son says he's the strongest in school. He says he's the smartest one in the classroom. Really? Now, I don't know if Ryan ever really is the strongest or the smartest or the fastest, but Ryan believes he is. Right. Mm-hmm. And when you walk around, and you talk to that kid has more swag than anybody I've ever met. And I'm like, dang, that's how it's supposed to be. I can't wait till that young man grows up and to see when he doesn't have any challenges and no obstacles. And he's got his daddy telling him to ignore the noise. Right. Yeah. And just be who you're supposed to be. I mean, I can't wait till he might be, you know, he might be president of the United States or he might run a prison gang, but he's going to run something, you know, and I'm excited for that. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch him grow. But that's where we're all at. We got to just let ourselves be who we're supposed to be.
Yeah, there's so many people out there scared. Even for me, 2 years ago, I was not willing to stand in front of a camera. I was always like taking photos, but not standing in front of photos. And I had this incredible story to share, and I was getting a lot of results by helping my friends start businesses. But they were like, man, you should be doing this full time. And guys, I was just scared. I mean, we're all hypercritical of ourselves. We don't like the way we look or sound or do these things. And I said, you know, I need to quit being a bitch, really, and just like put it out there. And so I had to train, man. I took public speaking classes and training and started competing in public speaking competitions, and now standing on stages around the country. It's a crazy 2 years, man. Just really just calling myself out, because I knew that the life that I had, the impact that I wanted to create, wasn't going to happen by me hiding in the shadows. And it kind of goes back to, you said, like the childhood. I had bullies back in grade school and things like that. And, you know, my mom's Japanese, so I grew up half immigrant here in the United States. I didn't always mix with the kids, you know, I just didn't see eye to eye with those people. And just, you think about that as like, you're taught as a child, like to fit in, like don't stand out, shut up, you know, dress like your friends, act like your friends, like don't do anything to make yourself stand out, because your parents are doing that thinking they're trying to protect you, because they think like, you know, you're going to get beat up or people are going to make fun of you if you try to stand out. But then you become an adult, Robert, and we realize that the people who are standing out get all the rewards, man. They get all the rewards. Like people who blend in, you don't get shit.
You know, there's an expression that I don't know if I came up with it or if I'm borrowing it. So I'm going to preface that. Man, everybody has a brand. Just some are more well-known than others. It's 100% right, you know. And in life, it's about standing out. You know, I don't want to live in the box. I want to live outside the box, because that's where the things are. My life changed when the decisions I made along that time, when they were not traditional decisions. I got better. I lived better. I had a different outcome than everybody else, because I challenged the norm. And I think that you've got to challenge the norm. You've got to talk about what's going on. You've got to share those stories. And man, I mean, if I hadn't done that, I wouldn't be on this podcast with you. You know, you got to change those events. You got to change your trajectory. And that's why I don't look back at things that are current, because everything's moving so quickly. You know, we're just going crazy, you know, and it's a good ride. It's a fun ride. It's how life should be. Should be about having new adventures and new experiences. You know, I mean, today I got the Astros game. I'm taking four others with me, you know, and I'm so excited to be in it. 2 years ago, I got invited. I got a chance to go to each of the three games. Two, because I got invited to go. One, because I paid the money. And it was expensive. It was expensive to go. It's just like it's expensive to get a ticket today. Today, I don't need anybody to invite me. I can buy those tickets today. You know, it's a different mindset. But that doesn't happen if you don't make a decision somewhere in your past to change.
I said, I want to touch back on the thing you talked about like a couple of years ago, that you were kind of in that lull and you just didn't really feel like doing things and you were making money, obviously. But could you go into a little bit of the insight so the listeners can understand why do you think that, what happened there?
Ooh, tough question. I'm not sure how I can answer this one. You know, I think life, you know, you let stuff affect you. Okay. You do. And when people that are important to you in your life are no longer there, or their judgment is no longer, or is becomes against you rather than for you, it changes everything. You challenge stuff. And you challenge your own belief system and like, man, is this what I should be doing? And you spend a lot of time focusing on what's already occurred. And you take your eye off the ball and you're striking out. Or you're not even batting. You know, you're not, if I get the first base, I get the first base. If I don't, I don't. I'm up by 10 runs. I'm good. Right? So pitchers keep throwing at me. I'm looking at the pitches. They're good. I'm not swinging. I'm looking at the pitches. They're balls. Okay. And I'm playing this game this way. And sometimes I'm good enough to get the first base, right? Without depending on the quality of the pitcher, right? Other times I'm missing my opportunity to try to maybe hit a home run, right? And I think it has to do with how you let other things affect you. When you realize that it's you versus you, big deal. Big stuff changes. You know, realize, hey, man, I'm going to die one day. And I'm not going to think about why I didn't do this or why I didn't. I am going to be thinking about why I didn't do this, why I didn't do that. Mm-hmm. Right? And why didn't I have a better life? Why didn't I? Would that have been better to me? Would it have been a better situation if I helped that person out? Would it have been a better situation if I wrote up to that girl and asked her out? Would it have been a situation if I signed on the dotted line and challenged myself? You know, I got a property down in South Texas. It's a Class A. It's a tough property right now. We talked a bit about, you know, a big BP contract. They want to put a bunch of leases down there. And it's a struggling property. I bought it knowing it was going to struggle. And I could avoid the easy path. But you know what? I want to learn, because that's how you're going to learn. If I figure this out, I'm going to figure something new in my life out that I'm going to change and add to the rest of my portfolio. So I think you've got to find your inspiration and you've got to remember who you are. And once you do that, man, you can do amazing things. You can move that needle.
That's huge, man. Because I think a lot of times we fall into that complacency trap, especially when we start making some kind of a comfortable income. And I'll tell you, throughout the corporate world, I've visualized this in the Houston area. We can live pretty well on a six-figure, low six-figure. I think most people, when they get it around 100 to 120,000 income, is when they start to tap out and be very complacent. And they, whatever the drive was that got them to that point, they just lose it, dude. It's just gone. It's like they start to live the exact same year, like 40 years in a row.
I think because they're around the same thing every day.
Yeah.
Their network, you know, we all want to have that barbecue. We want to live in the end of the cul-de-sac and have the big, you know, neighborhood barbecue, the neighborhood, you know, whatever. And you sit out there and you become around everybody else. And really nobody gets out of that bubble. Because you are the bubble. You're in the bubble. You can't see the other world outside of that, right? And you realize, man, if I just make a change, I can change my zip code. If that's important to you. If it's not important to you, I can maybe improve the quality of my kids' life. I can send them to a better school. You know, my kids go to private school. I pay basically what it takes to go to Harvard for those kids right now. And I never thought I would have been able to be in that situation if I hadn't challenged myself, right? And so, you know, when you go through these things and you realize that there's something else out there, then you know, you just got to find your pressure point. What is your pressure point? Is it your children? Is it your own personal satisfaction? Is it taking care of a sick family member? Is it, you know, trying to make sure that you leave a legacy behind? Once you identify what's important to you, things change.
Man, that's big, because I'll tell you, an example for me was about 2 years ago when I decided that I wanted to go out there and write a book and be a speaker and help people. I got a lot of pushback from people that I thought were my friends. And you kind of touched on that as well. Like, you start to get these critics who you thought were your friends. You've gone on vacations with them, had dinner with them, you know, people that you really thought you knew that would support you. If they see you trying to improve and leave that bubble you talked about, when you're trying to climb over that wall and leave that box that they're hanging out in, a lot of times they're going to throw stones at you because they want you to fall down back in the box with them. Because here's the thing, is a lot of people out there are surrounding themselves with people who are all perceived as equals, right? They all think we're all equals. And then here's Robert, here's Tony trying to climb out of this box and become better. Why? It's like, we're comfortable where we are. Like, I don't want to do any more personal development. I don't want to get in shape. I don't want to make more money. But here's these two jokers trying to climb out the box over here. And instead of like climbing with you or throwing you a ladder, they're just like trying to drag you by your cufflinks and grab your pants and like pull you back down in the box, the whole crab theory. And it's like so true. And I didn't experience that until a big way, until really the last 2 years. And my wife and I, we woke up at New Year's, actually this year, 2019, we went to Colorado for the holidays and we were there and we woke up on New Year's Day and we said, you know what? Let's work as a team and just get rid of anybody that's causing us some kind of negative toxic emotion in our lives. And so we both wrote down a piece of paper. You know, she wrote down the names that are bothering her, the people we knew, and I wrote down the names that were bothering me. And then we just deleted all those people from our social media that day. And I'll tell you, like, our life has never been fucking happier like this entire year. We're here at the end of 2019. And when you can get rid of those kind of people that are toxic and making the passive aggressive remarks or rolling their eyes at your success or giving them the half-assed golf claps, dude, your life will become so much more powerful when you start to eliminate those people from your life.
You know, 15 years ago, I was with a really strong church group. This is like a Bible study group. We all had babies at the same time. We all, you know, kind of were growing. And, you know, as you said, exactly what happened. I changed. I started having different kind of conversations. I started, you know, talking about different things. And, you know, fast forward 15 years later, all but one couple, I don't talk to them anymore. And the one that I do works with me now, you know, and he's seen the rise. He's seen what's happened over the last 15 years. And, you know, he was not a hater. He was a proponent of that. Right. Mm-hmm. And I'm so happy to have him around me. He's like a part of my old life. Right. That I remember, you know, but there were, those guys are gone and I didn't ask them to leave. They just kind of like fell out by themselves. Right. And it's like, it's really hard. Right. But, you know, I don't think you hit it a couple times, right? They become the naysayers and they become toxic and you have to make a decision and a choice. Family too is the same way. You know, they got to come around on their own and they will. They'll come around on their own once you continue to prove, you know, the process and the concept over and over again, and they'll want to be a part of it as well.
Yeah, I think I have seen some come around over the years. I mean, the thing is, if we evolve and pivot and try to improve our entire lives, people come at their own pace, man. Not everybody's on that personal development journey. And sometimes they discover it later. And then they come back to you. They're like, man, you were right all along. It's like been like 10 years. Like no shit, dude. Like, glad to see you finally catching up, you know? And, you know, it's unfortunate so many people fall in that complacency trap, but it is so important, man. Listen to Robert. He's telling you guys, You got to surround yourself with people who challenge you, and you got to see, and if you can surround yourself with people who see the potential in you that you don't even see yourself, man, that's even a bigger blessing.
I think what's really helped me a lot with my new family, this new group that I have, right, my new network, is that we all drink the same Kool-Aid. You know, I share with them what I learned. And that's a mistake that I don't know if it was a mistake, I just didn't know any better. I didn't share what I was learning with my church group back in the day. I didn't tell them to go to visit the real estate club. I just kind of did it, you know? And if I would have shown them the map that I was learning, you know, then maybe some of them would have come around. The one that did, you know, come stay there with me was already having financial success. He was already doing great things. He didn't have this, you know, scarcity mentality, an abundance mentality. You know, we had like a bromance, right? Because we were always talking business, right? And I'm so happy now he works with me, you know, but it's like my new group, right? I share with them. I want them to win with me. I don't want to start over. And I didn't know that. I just kind of something I picked up along the way that I was so happy in winning that I want you to feel that happiness. I want you to win. And guess what? When you help other people win, they're going to want to help you win too, you know? And that's your new network. That's your new group. That's your support system.
Hey, Robert, man, this has been an awesome episode. You know, we're in Houston, man. We should meet up sometime and
yes.
Hang out, because it'd be cool to get to know
I
you
would love
in person.
That.
But it's, you know, I want you to close out this episode by telling somebody that's been listening that, dude, they're just scared, man. They're just scared to get started. Like, give them some encouragement.
If you want happiness, choose happiness. Just go out there and choose it. It's there. You just have to change. It's right in front of you. Just grab it. Grab it. Surround yourself with a group of people that are like-minded, that want to win, and help each other win. Help them do it. You know, read, get exposed to, you know, change out the negative, toxic relationships, and start following those mentors like Ed Milet. Start following the mentors like Gary Vaynerchuk or Grant Cardone, and listen to them every day. Every day, you will recondition your mind. You'll shake off the old world, and you'll let the new world help you create a new future for yourself.
That's awesome, man. So if people want to follow you on social media or get a hold of you, what's the best way for them to do so?
Yeah, you know, you can go to me and find me on my website at theapartmentrockstar.com. That's theapartmentrockstar.com. We're also on YouTube under the same name. And then on Instagram, hey, you can DM me directly. I do what I can. I get tons of DMs every day. You know, Apartment Rockstar. That's the name, at Apartment Rockstar.
Awesome, Robert. Well, thank you for being on the show, buddy.
Thank you for listening to the Apartment Rockstar podcast. Be sure to follow Robert on Instagram at Apartment Rockstar. You can find more podcasts on our Apartment Rockstar YouTube channel.